It is the Daily Flip-Off as we bring together our SEN coverages of footy, the constant conversation between round 20 and round 21 and the Olympics. What's happening in Tokyo, where there is a broad sense of amazement as to what has taken place at the track with Carsten Vorholm of Norway breaking the world record in the 400 metres hurdles by 0.76 and lowering the mark below 46 seconds. Shock and awe in the aftermath of that. Kane Corns, hello to you.
Shock and awe is right. One of the greatest athletic feats I've ever seen. I mean, you've just got to put it into perspective. So if I went out to the track and I run a bit, Jared, not at this speed, but if I tried to run one lap of an athletics track and you said you have to run it in 60 seconds, 400, I'd struggle to pull that off. He's done it in 46 seconds while hurdling. Yes. Like, it's just phenomenal. And the power, like, the confidence as he cleared that last hurdle, he just sort of looked and then he just taken off and put a couple of metres on the US athlete and bang, he's broken a world record. So I wasn't expecting that. I haven't seen anything like that. But how good is the Olympics when you witness just unbelievable athletic efforts like that?
So Ryan Gregson told us it was the greatest performance in the history of athletics. He saw it about 40 minutes before we did because there were Australian medal races along the way. And it was everything that was promised. And when Vorholm crossed the line, he shredded his Lycra suit, just ripped it open like the Hulk, which is not that easily done either.
No, well, and as he should, because he is Superman. Like, that is a superhuman performance. That's just why I just love the track, as you know, and to see someone do that is just phenomenal. And I did like a couple of our 1500 metre athletes. You know, I've been keeping a close eye on this. Firstly, the King of King Island, Stewie McSwain, just that he attacks it from the front. Jared, in the 1500, he runs his own race, and if they're good enough to beat him, to use his words, they'll beat him, but he's not going to sit at the back and get caught up in the mess. So he attacked it in his heat. He's through to the semi. And Ollie Hall has been running overseas for a while, so his results have been lost a little bit, but he's every bit a chance to get through to the final as well. So a significant day over at the Olympics, and I've been a little bit jealous that you've been covering it.
The track and field is quite brilliant. The long jump was a remarkable competition where the German world champion, with her final jump, so the end of six rounds, there was a tie up ahead of her at 6.97, and on her final jump, Mahambo went straight past Reese and Brummer and settled it with a 7-metre jump. So it's been thrilling stuff all over the place. And even in the javelin qualifiers, Kelsey Lee Barber, who's the world champion from Australia, had two horrid throws, and it all comes down to one last go at it to try to make the Olympic final, and she hauls it out 62.59. So right in the clutch, in the maximum pressure, and this is the bit about Olympics. Can you handle it when you get there? And Kelsey Lee did with that final throw. She gives herself a chance at a medal. We'll loop back through the rest of the Olympics shortly, but let's talk a little bit of footy.
Let's do that.
Yeah, Chris Mayne's retiring.
Yeah, he has. I'm not shocked by it. I did say when I read the news, I mean, it's just one of those players who's maximised every bit that they've been given. And you would remember and be familiar of the discussions we had about that four-year contract extension the first up contract that he signed at Collingwood. And there was significant criticism out of that. I think Daniel Wells was sort of wrapped up in that as well. And the first year didn't go to plan and was sort of plotting the demise of Chris Mayne. But didn't he hang it in there and morph himself into a wingman and play multiple positions, was a part of the run towards the premiership in 18, of course, and probably extended his career by 2 or 3 years further than what we thought. So I'm not surprised with the direction that Collingwood are going, and he was pretty realistic about where his footy is at. He wants to keep playing but realises it's going to be difficult at that level. So the first of many changes, you would imagine, with the direction that a new coach will go at Collingwood.
Yeah, that older guard will give way. So 245 games, you're right. Those conversations in 2017 where he was broadly written off. I remember his dad ended up being interviewed at one stage. It was just a grim public narrative around him. It looked like a terrible buy, and that with 3 years remaining on a contract, you weren't quite sure whether he would play any sort of role. But he was instrumental in those 2 years in 18 and 19 when they had their proper run at it. What, 9 seasons with Freo and 5 with Collingwood? I agree. That's wringing every little bit out of you got of your career. And he should leave well satisfied. I've spoken with him a couple of times, Kane. I'm sure you have too. He's got coach all over him, not necessarily senior coach, but he will move into coaching. He's already prepared himself for that. He's got a really clear idea of what his post-playing days will look like. In fact, playing might be holding him back as he can go and get on with the rest of it now.
Yeah, and he wouldn't be alone. So we had an extended chat with Sean Higgins this morning, Jared, and he does a regular spot with Dwayne, but I haven't heard a lot of him, and he's got coach written all over him as well. It's just an interesting spot. Like, once it was such a, you know, the progression for a lot of players that had that and harboured that view, but there's just limited spots now. I mean, and the elite will still stand out, and if you're telling me that Chris Mayne is of that, he'll find his feet and he will get a role, but it's just not the career path that it once was, for obvious reasons, and there's just not as many jobs as there was. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of players still look to move into that, but it's not as attractive as it was. But congratulations, 245 games. Not many people get to there. And a good example of how you can revitalise and rejuvenate your career by playing a different role or being open to do that. He was a lead-out forward, an accurate set shot for goal at Fremantle. Remember, you don't even think of him as a forward now. He's played wing, he's played across half-back, and multiple roles. So it's a good example for players who are struggling and going through a flat patch and struggling with a bit of form, that you can rejuvenate your career if you're open to playing a different spot.
Kane, the Jack Viney conversation. So when this came through last night at 360, we saw the vision before we got the verdict. And I thought, yeah, this will be a week suspension. That really is not on. It called to explain. So he gets the serious misconduct charge. Which is that it doesn't look good. It's got no part in the game. And we want you to explain your actions. So this is stomping and pinching and making contact with the face and the like. A week, $7,500. What struck me, and it's just the passionate debate around it from those who truly think this is actually quite a violent action. And I know those texts were coming through in my first hour, and I've seen them come through along the way. How are you thinking about this ahead of tonight's tribunal hearing?
Well, I said three. Like, I heard your comments, and I thought, I don't know if one's enough. And I get trying to explain how you can land at three, and I think that's what it deserves. Now, how the tribunal justifies doing that, you're sort of an expert in that, and we've spoken to Sam Edman a couple of times this morning, but essentially, as you said, he's going to explain himself, and then the tribunal will make just a call on it. They'll almost chuck the charts out and make a judgment on it. It just had the risk to cause significant long-term injury. I mean, we're not talking about a knock to the head or, you know, a loose elbow like Lance Franklin last week. We all didn't like that. But when you consciously lean and dig your elbow into someone's neck for an extended and prolonged period of time, you exactly know what you're doing. And what else are you doing other than trying to render someone unconscious, essentially? I hated it from the first moment I saw it. And it's a big story, I reckon, Jared. And it probably lands at two, but I wouldn't be upset or disappointed or surprised if it got to three.
So I've just gone back through the serious misconducts over recent years to see if there is something above a week. And the one that is there is Connor McKenna got 3 weeks for biting the neck, and that was regarded as serious misconduct. So I suppose you've got to run it. So there's biting, there's stomping, and there's pinching, and then how you want to define this and how you quantify it. The other one is, we actually debated whether or not to show it. And I said to our producers, the Brian Lake on Drew Petrie was, I felt, too inflammatory to show last night. I didn't think that was in the same guys. He got 4 weeks for what ended up being the choke. When they were in the grapple, Lake above Petrie grabbed hold of his throat and held him in the choking motion for too long. It's actually really nasty to look at. I might be wrong. I might have underestimated the Vine. Can you picture the Lake one?
We've had it come through a number of times this morning. For whatever reason, I can't. I can't recall the McKenna biting one either. But, you know, I've had a lot of examples of, you know, we're going back a while, but Chris Judd with the pressure point and things like that, just unruly things that you wouldn't ever think to do on a footy field. I get a jumper punch or a push and a shove or in a contest, or you're frustrated someone's hanging on to you, so I chuck an elbow back. I just can't remember vividly of recent times someone digging an elbow into someone's neck. And when you get examples in other sports and on the streets that significant injuries and life altering, and I don't want to be over dramatic here, but It's just a shocking look. So, look, I think one's not enough. Two is probably where it'll lie. And I wouldn't, as I said, be just disappointed if it's three. But I'm just not sure what he was thinking.
Yeah, so three takes him out of the rest of the home and away season if it landed there. And three's the high end. It's an extreme action now that gets you any more than three. So you believe that it sits in that.
I'd give him three. And I think the landscape's changed as well. So even going back to, you know, if Brian Lake did that now, what year did you say that was? I think our standards have shifted from now. We're seeing sling tackles get 3 and 4 weeks, and I understand the reason behind that because of concussion, but our standards have changed in terms of what's acceptable with anything relating to the head. And I think that'll be the case again tonight, where we see a severe penalty for the way that our attitudes and our directions of what's expected of our players have moved.
Yeah, Lake was 2014 when that transpired.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah. How was Classified last night? Less interested on what happened on screen and what it was like off screen.
No, it was good. Like, it was just the detail of what went on behind the scenes. And, I'm fascinated by how these things sort of leak out. And Hawthorn's plan to release this yesterday before it got out on Friday, you know, 3 or 4 days before they wanted it to. You know, Caroline Wilson said on air that it leaked from board level and her and Sam got a hold of it. So what went on behind the scenes, why it took them 6 hours? I mean, we spoke about it at 11 o'clock on Friday and it took some hours for them to actually make the announcement. There was emotional scenes behind the club and families were involved and all of that. So I'm fascinated to what goes on behind the scenes. I mean, Caroline Wilson was very defensive of Alistair Clarkson and his role in what he said and what I think sort of misled the public and the media. I'm quite strong on that and his role in that, but she defended him with that and said that he genuinely believed what he was saying, or she believed that to be the case. I'm not as sure. It's just one of the most intriguing stories I've ever come across since probably I've retired.
Yeah, it's every bit of that. Was Hutchie suggesting that Jason Dunstall should succeed Jeff Kennett?
Yeah, he did. He said he'd be the perfect man to step up as president. He's done the role with the BBL, of course, and you tend to agree, don't you? Like, I think you can actually picture the Hawthorn fans. They're fed up with Jeff. We get these texts through and the frustrations of the handling of it, and Jeff, being past his time. But Jason Dunstall is such a popular figure, and when he speaks, people listen. So it would be, for Hutchie's point, the ideal time for Jason Dunstall to take over. And it's hard to argue with that. I can't think of a more worthy candidate and someone that the Hawthorn fans would get behind and, I guess, flip over into this new era.
I tiptoed Jace towards some of that last night on 360.
Say?
So he was desperate to sidestep the Jeff Kennett
was
criticisms.
He?
Yes. And I understand that. So I just I presented to him that Jeff has always pontificated and lectured others around fiscal responsibility, around personal accountability in leadership, and the third element was on governance, and that he'd failed in all three aspects of that. And I think Jason wanted to balk around that if possible, which I understand. But you're right.
Well, he said enough, didn't Jason said enough. I mean, when he's pretty measured with his commentary. When he said it was embarrassing on Friday, I mean, that's enough, isn't it? I think we can read between the lines as to what that means.
Yep. So it'd be interesting to see whether anyone has the courage at Hawthorn to either tap Jeff, or there's certainly it won't happen through challenge. And Jeff's not spending enough time in front of the mirror, I don't think, in the aftermath of this. Hey, just our teams at the games, Kane. So with the duties last night, I'm not quite sure how much you saw, but the Opals needed to win by 25. They won by 27.
Yeah.
So that's a big escape, I think. That they haven't had a good tournament so far, but it doesn't matter now. They've got three games under the belt. They've got through the pool stage. They run flat bang into the US. So I don't know what it holds for them, but it was a hell of a lot better than going out before you get to the knockout phase.
Yeah, absolutely. We spoke about the hockey, didn't we, yesterday, and the disappointment of that. Now, the Matildas would have been in a similar... Sorry, the
Opals,
basketball...
Yep.
The Opals would have been in the same situation as as that. So to be able to do that, and I sort of switched off at about half time. The scores were reasonably level from memory. I'm thinking, well, there's no way they're going to get to, I think it was, I read 24, but in essence it was 25 in the end was the magical number. They're going to get there. I just didn't see how that was possible. So it was a phenomenal performance, albeit I put my hand up and I nodded off. Jared, I didn't see much in the second half, but to keep them alive is magnificent. And the Matildas, not so. I mean, that was a thrilling one as well. Just some of the umpiring decisions have such a massive impact in a cutthroat game like that, don't they? The Sam Kerr goal from the penalty situation, the corner, I think it was, and that was overturned for a foul in the box. You know, devastating going down for them. I had high hopes for them. So it's just the devastation of the Olympics when it comes to team sports, and feels like it's over before they really got into it.
So Boomers Argentina tonight, 10 o'clock, and then potentially the US after that. So the Boomers are they're big time now, are they? Once we reach the knockout phase and what's been attempted.
Staring down a date with the US as well. Spoke to Chris Anstey about that on this show. He's thinking that they'll be good enough to get over the hump of Argentina, but then the big one comes with the Boomers, who they've beaten in the lead-up tournaments, and definitely not the same aura about this US team, of course. There's a lot of water to go under the bridge tonight against Argentina. But if it goes that way, staring down the barrel of a semi-final against the US is going to be huge. I wanted to get your thoughts on Sifan Hassan, Jared.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Which is phenomenal. What she is doing. So she's just a superstar. She holds the record for the hour run. So 60 minutes. She's run further than any other person. She's 1500 meter runner who fell over in her heat and got up and won. And then she won the 5000 last night. So her first Olympic gold medal last night. Just a phenomenal one. She's also chasing down a 10,000 metre. So she's going for the triple. It's just amazing what some of these athletes are doing.
So she took our breath away in the 1500. And it was questionable whether she needed to do it. Once she got tripped and interfered with after the bell, as she probably gets put through anyway. But she got up, she looped the field and took it into her own hands. So she's exerted a huge amount of energy where she probably had intended to canter her way through. But there she was last night after the driving rain and hit the main stadium in the 5,000 metre final. So she, yes, is out of the Netherlands, a gold medal already. She's captured many a sports fan. Absolutely. She's front of mind now for what she might be able to achieve on the track. Kane, the lines are open to talk to you. 1-300-736-736. And as we say each day, flip off.
Flip off, Jared. I'll speak to you tomorrow. Absolutely, you can do what Jared has just said.
So Kane Corns with the footy conversation there. He's on the app. You just open the app. Flip will appear for you. You can grab the next half hour of him. Bob and Andy coming up. But if you want to have a chat with Kane, particularly around the Jack Viney incident, 1-300-736-736. You can also call me on an Olympics front, but the texts are pouring through. We see both of us see what comes through. 0433 98 11 16.